So today, we will continue to look around the room to see what we can learn about ourselves and unity. Last week, we talked about Chakra Man, this colorful piece of art over here on the wall that represents the core values of this church. So today, let's start on the quilts that represent the 12 powers. You know these quilts were made by congregants, and I'm going to save that story for next week, because there's so much to say about the quilts themselves and the 12 powers and what they mean. If you're listening online, go to unityofwimberley.com, click on About Us, and look in that menu on the left and click on Our Quilts. And there's a whole page that shows every quilt and explains the power that it represents. So you know how in Unity we claim to be God? We... Oh. It doesn't always feel that way, does it? We describe our divinity like a drop of ocean water. The drop contains all the elements of the ocean, but it's not the whole ocean. That's how we are divine. We are made of divine elements, and we have access to all the attributes of what we call God. So Unity's co-founder, Charles Fillmore, wrote a book in 1930, so Unity would have been about 40 years old by then. And he named what he thought were 12 basic divine attributes that he believed are hardwired into us. If we're made in the image and likeness of God, Fillmore thought, these are the components. Psychologists might call them the core self or authentic self. We call it divine consciousness or higher self. It's that part of you that is pure awareness. And we'll look at these 12 powers separately, starting today with faith, strength, love, and wisdom. But remember, they all work together. So we're like medical students studying different parts of the body, but knowing that it makes up a whole. What's hard to get my mind around sometimes is that these are not just qualities of personality. They are principles. They're spiritual laws. And like all spiritual laws, we're using them all the time, whether we know it or not. And like all spiritual laws, they are neutral, which means they can be used for good or ill. Or put it this way, they're used at different levels of awareness, and we'll talk about that. They can be under or overdeveloped in us. I have found it hard lately to convince some people that spiritual laws are neutral. They want to believe anything spiritual has to be good, and spiritual laws can only be used for good, and your motives have to be pure. Sorry. Think of it this way. Think of a table. A table can be used for a loving family meal, or it can be used to assemble a bomb. The table doesn't know or care. It doesn't judge you. It doesn't check your motives. It doesn't reward or punish. It's just available for your use. That's how principles work, and that's how these 12 powers work. So the power of imagination, for instance, imagination can be used to create Disney World, or it can be used to worry about everything that might happen tomorrow. Spiritual laws, including these 12 powers, are tools to use for whatever we are doing. We study them to learn what's available to us and what it looks like to wield these powers from the highest possible level of being. We get to decide how to channel these divine powers to create our lives. So before we look at them these 3 weeks, you might want to pick one thing in your life you'd like to improve, and each week see how these powers might be applied. It'll make more sense to you if you make it specific. Just don't beat yourself up. Don't leave here saying, I should have more faith. I should be stronger. You already have faith. You have strength. Remember, these are divine qualities born in you. And in studying these, I've found some that are underdeveloped in me. So we're all learning them together, like using any tools. So let's start with faith. I grew up in a church where we were taught that faith meant accepting a particular set of beliefs. And if I had any questions about that, I just didn't have enough faith. Instead, faith is concentrating all our spiritual powers on our inner knowing, what we know to be true, even if we can't see it or prove it yet. The Bible says faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. It's Hebrews 11:1. You'll need to know that for the test. So assurance of things hoped for, conviction of things not seen. Faith is the power to know spiritually, to trust absolutely, to believe with confidence and conviction. And we use it all the time. Our greatest faith is in things we don't think about much. The sun will come up in the east. Summer in Texas will be hot. If you plant tomato seeds, you get tomatoes, not oranges. Sometimes people train us to have faith in their behavior. Uncle Harry will be drunk at Christmas. The dog will fetch a ball every time you throw it. Now, not all dogs, but the ones who will do that teach you to have faith in their behavior. People do the same thing. We might not think of it as faith or call it faith. We call it what we know, what we've learned, or what always happens. We're also on the lookout for what we cannot have faith in. We can't trust. And that's how we form opinions. So do you have more faith in Ford or Toyota? More faith in paleo or vegan? When we decide what will serve us best, we're acting on faith. Underdeveloped faith shows up as doubt, skepticism, suspicion, which are all just intellectual disguises for fear. At the other end, egocentric faith is narrow-minded and dogmatic. My mind is made up, don't confuse me with the facts. We see it in politics, we see it in religion. God said it, I believe it, that settles it. That's some overdeveloped faith. Using faith in higher consciousness is having confidence and conviction based on truths, principles, and spiritual laws. It's from understanding the way the universe works. And there's a great deal we don't understand about the universe, of course, and that's where our faith wavers. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do humans continue to be violent? It takes faith to believe there is order, there is a divine presence within us, no matter what's going on. Sometimes when people are in despair, they're told, well, just have more faith. But you don't jump from despair to bliss just claiming everything is wonderful. Faith can be built in steps. So the first step up from despair is hope. Hope gets a bad rap in New Thought circles because hoping for good includes the possibility of bad. But hope is a start. It's light at the end of the tunnel. Hope is real and powerful and affirming. If you have even a glimmer of hope, you've already shifted your consciousness into a more positive place. After hope is blind faith. That's white-knuckle believing. I know things can be better, or God will provide, or wherever we are, God is, and all is well. You can have blind faith that you are more powerful than you realize, you are divine at your core, because Ellen said so. That's blind faith. And then you move up to understanding faith. We know how the sun comes up in the east, or why it appears to. We learn how to use spiritual principles to get desired results. We move beyond sheer belief to understanding. The highest form of faith is from the divine within, or the higher self. You're in touch with that still, small voice of divine guidance. You have faith in your connection with the universe. Not surprisingly, Jesus is probably the best example we have of faith. Remember when he said to God, I thank you for having heard me, and I know you always hear me. That's faith, that steady connection or sense of oneness. And now strength. Strength clearly is about perseverance, endurance, staying the course. Strength is linked with faith, and you can see why. So just as you keep on practicing the piano, with faith you'll get better. You keep using spiritual tools and trust you'll see results. Someone with underdeveloped strength can't stick with anything. Someone with egocentric strength is stubborn, a steamroller, a bully, my way or the highway. In higher consciousness, we use strength to persist in our spiritual growth. Strength is not just single-mindedness, but resilience. When you're knocked off course, when you meet obstacles, strength doesn't give up, it makes adjustments. Athletes call this mental toughness. Michael Jordan said, if you run into a wall, figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. That's strength. I was married years ago to a pilot. When I was married to a pilot. And he told me, I've never forgotten this, he said, when you are crashing, you don't have time to be scared or think about death. You go to your training, right, Bill? You try A, you try B, you try C, and you'll hit the ground still trying to solve the problem. Or you'll solve it and soar into the wild blue yonder. But adaptation, the willingness to try new methods to reach the same goal, may be the most important aspect of strength. Strength used well is not rigid. Think of how the Colorado River carved the Grand Canyon. It kept finding the path of least resistance, but it persisted in that. We all know people who use strength to cling stubbornly to old beliefs, and we know people who give up too easily. But for most of us, strength might show up as one of the voices we hear when we take a risk or make a change. We're often arguing with our own strength. So, for instance, strength tells you to be honest on your income taxes, while fear tells you there's not enough money. Strength sends you in to confront an employee who's not performing up to par, while fear wants everyone to like you. This is where faith comes in again. It's easier to stand up for something you truly believe in. It's easier to persevere when you have faith it will get better. Years ago, a psychologist did a study at Illinois Bell Telephone during the time AT&T was breaking up. I'm too young to remember that, but some of you might. It was a big deal for people who worked at the various phone companies. In Illinois, half the employees were laid off in 1 year, and their job descriptions were changing, and extra work fell on the ones who were left. So not surprisingly, this psychologist found 2/3 of those people had high blood pressure and depression, but 1/3 did just fine with health and morale. And they all demonstrated aspects of strength. They stayed involved rather than feeling isolated. They tried to influence outcomes rather than being helpless. They chose to learn from experience instead of feeling threatened by it. They saw the bigger picture. The layoffs were due to forces beyond the control of anyone, so they didn't take it personally. They were also good at giving and receiving help. Strength is how we choose good feelings, even when times are tough. Dig deep, double down. We have names for it. So apply this to your spiritual growth. Strength at the level of the divine or authentic self is where we stay the course on a spiritual path. And that might include going deep with one path and not flitting from Buddhism to Unitarian to Unity to Toltec. Exploration is fine, but you don't want to be distracted by every shiny new object. Strength is setting an intention and doing what it takes to get there. Charles Fillmore said, "Never let the thought of weakness enter your consciousness. Always ignore that suggestion and affirm yourself to be a tower of strength within and without. Just keep on keeping on." And then love. Love is more than I thought. Love is the ability to harmonize, unify, and feel affection for people, places, or things. But it also has strong powers of attraction, not just in the romantic sense, but in the cosmic sense. Underdeveloped love makes it hard to feel positive regard for another person. Love from the ego can be someone who loves indiscriminately. It might show up as lust or neediness or even abuse. In elevated consciousness, love is practiced three ways. Emotion is the one we know best. Affection or desire for something. This is the love everyone wants, whether we're good at it or not. Love for a spouse, a parent, a child, it's our need to connect. And the good news about emotional love is that it is divine love in expression. That means there's no limit to it. We can let it flow through us. We don't have to dredge up more love to try to love one more person. Just let it flow. Attraction is another use of love, to attract something to us or attract ourselves to it. Love attracts like a magnet. It's the power behind the law of attraction or the law of mind action. We've talked a lot about desire. It means of the Father, desire, S-I-R-E. Desire lets us know what's available to us, and love finds it for us. Harmony is the third way to use love, to unify or bring agreement into a situation, also to harmonize our own thoughts. So like all spiritual principles, love is neutral. It doesn't care how we use it. Love matches us with whatever we desire. It harmonizes without regard to whether those things are good for us. It's an indiscriminate matchmaker. This is also brain science. We find evidence to support what we already believe or already feel. That's why we say misery loves company. Misery loves miserable company. So you can commiserate together. It's love that screens for more of the same. Even if we hotly deny that we love what's going on and want more of it. So in that sense, love is the power to focus and intend. What we desire, we intend to have. Can you see how focus and love could be the same thing? If we're focused on the negative, you could say you love the negative, and the principle of love will harmonize or match you with more. And as we've said many times, the English language uses the word love for way too many things. And we love at different levels of awareness. So, unconscious love might send us seeking things that may not be good for us, whether it's a boyfriend or another drink, something you feel like you gotta have at all costs. Love from our senses is easy to understand. We love the view of the hills. We love the music we hear. Love from personality screens for our desires. It'll go out and find someone who likes long walks on the beach, piña coladas, getting caught in the rain. The attracting power of love goes to work to match us with our desires. Love in higher consciousness is our desire for spiritual growth. We attract what will support our desire to be the best person we can be, to live from divine oneness. So love is not just affection for people or animals or chocolate. It's a principle and a power. You know the famous quote from Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit priest, who said, "Someday, after mastering the winds, the waves, the tides, and gravity, we shall harness for God the energies of love. And then, for a second time in the history of the world, man will have discovered fire." So just as faith and strength work together, we combine love with the power of wisdom. Some of the names of these powers have morphed since Fillmore wrote about them. What we call wisdom started out as judgment, and he meant good judgment, use your best judgment. And love can run amok without good judgment. Wisdom or judgment is not coldly intellectual. It discerns, not just with thinking, but with intuition. It takes everything we know and have learned to make heart connections. And we use it for everything, from what we wear, to where we work, to the people we spend time with. We use wisdom in choosing what to love. Underdeveloped wisdom can't make decisions, or tell good from bad. And we all know some people with bad judgment, at least in some situations. And we've all probably made bad decisions too. Excuse me, I'm trying to fix my microphone. There you go. Egocentric wisdom is highly judgmental. It's shrewd, it's critical, it's a know-it-all. It's also carrying baggage from the past and calling it wisdom when we have overlearned the lessons of life. One tip-off is the use of the words always and never. I'll never do that again. Might be baggage instead of wisdom. In elevated consciousness, wisdom is the power we use to apply what we know in our hearts to discern divine guidance. We ask often in classes, how do you know when it's divine guidance? Wisdom is the power you use for that. It's more than looking at facts, and we need to go beyond facts in our world. Just look at the medical studies. Coffee's good for you. No, coffee isn't good for you. Republicans will solve all your problems. No, it's the Democrats. Lifestyle, research, opinions, we have to use wisdom to sort out all the conflicting information we hear. Some things we can change, some we can't. We ask for the wisdom to know the difference. It helps us make wise choices. It tells us forgiveness is better long-term than revenge. It tells us prayer is better than worry. It's knowing your values and living in alignment with them. We're constantly using the power of wisdom. We might call it logic or thinking or figuring it out, but there's an inner element to it. It's a willingness to be guided as well as to take everything you've experienced and bring it to bear on a new situation. And it's only fair to say that much of our wisdom comes from having gone through difficulty and pain. Wisdom is how we put ourselves back together after a breakdown. Wisdom allows you to see through chaos and uncertainty, to remain calm in a storm, to handle difficult situations with grace. Matthew Fox says, divine wisdom works in you if you do not cross bridges before you come to them. So wisdom is part of your spiritual DNA as well as your sum total human experience. You have a deep reservoir of wisdom in you. You can use it consciously for serenity and health and happiness. That's what all these powers are for, is to make life better. Faith is knowing we live in an ocean of divine love no matter the circumstances. Strength is the inner wherewithal to persevere and to make course corrections as needed. Love binds the earth together and delivers whatever you seek. And wisdom is allowing yourself to be steered by your inner awareness so you know what to do and when to do it. We use all these powers to create our lives. So I invite you to go about this week remembering you have access to all the attributes of God. They're already installed in you, ready to be used and developed as you will. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we just become still and quiet and turn within. Meditation is an opportunity to clear our minds of everything else and find our eternal connection with that divine presence within. So see if you can feel that. Your presence today might feel like joy or peace or comfort. It contains all 12 of these powers and more. This is where you go to find your faith, to use your strength, to feel your love, and to be guided by your wisdom. They're all yours already. It's up to you to put them into practice. And what an opportunity. What an awareness of who we truly are. To look at these 12 powers and know, that's me. I can do all those things. We may not do them well at first, but we have strength to persevere. We have faith that these powers can be developed. We gather more wisdom every step of the way. And we share our love with other people. And so for a moment, just feel all those powers in you, awake and ready to be used, being used, whether you know it or not, but wanting your attention, wanting your partnership. See if you can feel them. Whatever it feels like today, this is God in you. It is your authentic self, your divine being. And it is yours with which to create your life. And so it is. Amen.
Alleluia.